generous support for Coastal Windage comes from Cameron's Restaurant Pub and Inn, and now RV Park. Cameron's is the only true British pub on the coastside, featuring 19 beers on tap and more than 60 brands of bottles. Come for the food and stay for the fun. Happy hour specials Monday through Friday. Open mic night on Thursday and karaoke on Friday and Saturday. Cameron's Restaurant Pub in Half Moon Bay.
It's summer on the coast, and you know what that means. No, not more fog. It means Ruben is on vacation, and it's time for the Summer Mike Series. Here's your host for the Summer Mike Series, Crystalyn.
Coastside, hope you're enjoying this week and that you had really a fun time last weekend with the holidays and hopefully extra days off. Thank you for tuning in to Coastal Windage, and we hope you have a great time with us today. We've got two fabulous people in the studio with us today. We've got Beverly Garrity and Nancy Marsh. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us. We're going to have a wonderful conversation about how volunteering is so amazing on this coastside. And if you want to call in and join the conversation and share your stories, please feel free. We've got a slightly different number today, 650-712-1233. 650-712-1233. How are you doing this morning, Beverly?
Excellent. I am so excited to be here.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. And Nancy, thank you for coming. Beverly, I think you've got some wonderful information. Tell the people out there who you are and why you're so awesome.
Oh, I don't know about that.
She is awesome.
I am Beverly Garrity, and I've lived here on the coastside since 1989. Yes, that long. And I'm looking today at talking about volunteering on the coastside. It's one of the many hearts of the heartbeats of the coastside. And I'd like to take a look at volunteering time and volunteering money, and or both. We have a special guest here, Nancy Marsh, who's on the board of Coastside Hope and Granada Community Services District. And we'll have some special call-in guests. Tell us your story. Please call in 650-712-1233 and tell us your inspiration and experiences you've had volunteering on the coastside. Nancy.
Do you want me? I'll start off. One of the things that was a little bit different from my story, I've only lived on the coastside 10 years, so that makes me still a newcomer. I never had a volunteering history. In my work life, I was one of those people who worked 10 or 11 hours a day and traveled 60 to 80 days a year. And so any leftover time was time with family. But once I retired, my ambition was to give back to all of the people who I knew were sort of keeping all the trains of my community running while I was often running. I gave money to them, but not so much my time. We moved to El Granada from the East Coast. I'm a native Californian, but work had moved us around the country for about 25 years, so we wanted to come back to California.
Where on the East Coast?
Oh, goodness. We lived in the western suburbs outside Philadelphia, and then Lexington, Kentucky, then South New Jersey, and then back to Pennsylvania.
All over the East Coast.
All over the East Coast. But California's home. So we ended up in El Granada, but moving to a new place when you're no longer working and your kids are grown, so you don't have a social network with schools and soccer clubs and work or those sorts of things, volunteering was my way to plug into the community. So I first found my Pilates studio. That was important. But there I met somebody who had previously been on the board of Coastside Hope, and recruited me to volunteer in the Family Harvest monthly food program, where we were, in those days, pre-pandemic, packing up tons and tons of food once a month. That was a good start. Then they recruited me into helping with Adopt a Family. And I was first a wrapper in Adopt a Family and a shopper, and now I work the front desk in Adopt a Family.
Yes.
And I buy the books for Adopt a Family.
I think we talked about it, but in 2000, I brought my kids, and it was motivated by having them do a volunteer service at ages 5 and 9. Brought them in, and they were the little elves. Now they have it set up a little differently, but they were the little elves who'd run around the back and pull all the toys.
All the toys. Yeah.
For the packages that we were assembling.
I met a lady last winter, similarly started with her kids when they were little. She's been doing it every year for 35 years.
Yeah, incredible.
You know, it's the thing that surprised me, both for that and as I got involved first as a volunteer on the Parks Advisory Committee with Granada Community Services District, it becomes really apparent to you how much of the community, even the government agencies, the commissions, the councils, the special districts, run on people who are basically volunteers. In some of them, you might get a stipend for the coming to the meetings, but there's lots of
work
outside.
That's not the motivation.
Yeah, you usually don't know that until after you
get
into it.
Right.
But, well, we should also know when there is a stipend, by the time you're done with all the pre-meeting meetings and all that, it comes out to 4 cents an hour.
Right. It's really not minimum wage. It might buy you dinner, you know, once a month.
So the sanitary, the Granada Sanitary District, that takes care of the parks, takes care of Quarry Park.
No. It's Quarry Park is a San Mateo County park.
Yes.
So Granada Community Services District was originally the sanitary district with sewers and trash. About 10 years ago, they, by vote of the people in the district, became a community services district so that they could take the property tax money that the district gets and invest it in creating more parks and recreation resources. So we have a plan that's currently going through the coastal development process with the county for a new park along Obispo Road on the Burnham Strip, and a very small community center to go with it. So we will have new assets.
Beautiful,
for the community.
Yeah.
The big 1,000-acre Quarry Park, the county can keep with all their resources. We get a little bit of money here.
Now, I represent that remark. So I was one of the co-creators of Quarry Park way back when, after the group, it was at least 10 to a dozen people who had been working on it for at least 10 years, and they were exhausted. So they got some new blood in and infused it with a couple of people, and we took it to the finish line. And now we have Quarry Park, which I mistakenly thought had gone under the umbrella.
Yeah.
Eventually.
We just have our little 6 acres of land that will develop into a park. But it will be an ADA accessible park. And which will be the only one, I think, in the El Granada area that is that accessible. And, of course, it has some of the most stunning views of the whole sweep of Half Moon Bay from that little patch of land. So it will be beautiful when
Excellent.
We finally get it done.
And I think I saw you soon after I met you through Coastside Hope doing the, or maybe before, I'm not sure, but doing, calling the community together for their input to the design of Burnham Strip.
Right. I think actually you came to our in-person workshop.
Yeah.
When I spent 3 years before I was on the board on the Parks Advisory Committee. And the Parks Advisory Committee did organized most of the community input and outreach. Several surveys, the in-person workshop, about 60 people came and helped map out the park. And
lots of community input.
Yeah. And it was actually cost no money. Other than renting the room at El Granada School,
really?
Because we happen to have volunteers on that board who had myself, Pat Tierney, who was a professor of Parks and Recreation, Michelle Dragony, the coastal butterfly, who's a communicator. We organized the surveys, created them, analyzed all the input, because from our professional experiences, we were able to do that with our donated time and donated expertise. So no consultants were hired for all of that community input.
Fabulous. Yeah. Excellent. Well, my volunteering starts probably with the adoptive family. Also, the schools. Fairlawnview Elementary School was a hub for bringing the community together in Monterra. And there were a few of us there who had come from the East Coast. I'm a Bostonian and a little bit of a New Yorker. And then came out to California in 1983. And back east, especially in New York, they had a lot of programs, specialized programs. And one of them was GATE, the Gifted and Talented Education. And they were not shy about tracking. And in California, tracking...
Oh, it looks like we have our first caller.
Oh, exciting. To be continued on that story.
Good morning. Who do we have with us?
It's Ken Myers.
Hi, Ken Myers. How are you?
I'm good. I just put the station on mute so it doesn't cause a problem.
Oh, thank you for knowing the rules of Radio Road.
I was involved in college radio years ago, so.
Oh, amazing.
So excited to hear from you, Ken. I'll have Nancy introduce you.
Thank you, Ken. I'm so glad you could call in because you're one of the first people I thought of when Beverly asked me to reach out to some of the Uber volunteers on the coast. Ken is, I know from Coastside Hope, he is the Santa Claus who recruits shoppers and people who are adopting families for adoptive family. But also, I know him from Holy Family Organizing. Ken is the lead organizer of the backpack drive. Organized the distribution of backpacks and school supplies to almost 500 Coastside children. Very first encounter with Ken was when he was the president of the Princeton by the Sea Homeowners Association, which is another volunteer effort that, and he called me to ask me to remove my campaign signs from their property. but yeah, so welcome,
actually,
Ken. Tell us your story.
I actually wasn't the president, but I was the head of IT. I still am. But people put signs in the common area, and I end up, you know, we have a rule of not, you know, you can put campaign signs up at your personal homes. That's fine. That's good free speech and stuff like that. But in the common areas, that then makes it look like the homeowners association is endorsing somebody. So he didn't want to do that.
So the rule of thumb is always put your phone number on your sign.
Trying to be nice.
you were very nice about it.
Yeah. But I've been involved in volunteering, I think, since I was a wee child.
What inspired you, Ken?
My parents, both, they modeled that behavior, and that was something that my sister and I were involved in volunteering, you know, when we grew up in upstate New York, and always were involved in something, a lot around the church, but as I am today, but it really was something instilled in us as children of, you know, giving back, and that being something that's really important.
Yeah.
So
when did you come to the Coastside, Ken?
Beth and I came to the Coastside in 1987, and I moved to California in 81.
Yeah.
So,
and how did you discover your passion for volunteering on the Coastside? What were your first organizations?
The first organization was Holy Family Episcopal Church.
Yeah.
And really got involved there. And then, and Holy Family, you know, started the backpack program 28 years ago.
Wow.
And I've been running it since 2013.
What is the backpack program, Ken?
So we help, we partner very closely with Coastside Hope. So they identify the children, who would have difficulty, their parents have difficulty in buying backpacks and school supplies.
So is it right around this time of the year that you do it?
Yeah, we literally just had the last activity for this year's program yesterday, which was moving all the leftover school supplies back from the Coastside Hope warehouse and offices back to Holy Family. We have a tough shed where we store all the leftover backpacks and school supplies to use for the next year. And we helped 483 kids this year, and they got a new backpack. And we try to get backpacks where their peers can't tell that they got help. Mm-hmm. So we get a high quality backpack, which we hope will last a year. So we get a lot of stuff from Land's End and from Eddie Bauer, and a couple of other places where we get the backpacks. And we try to find a really wide variety of them. So, the kids really have a choice and they can go in and pick. And that's the delightful part of the program. There's a lot of work before that kind of gets to the 2 days of distribution. Watching the smiles in the kids' faces when they picked out their backpack and stuff like that. And then they've got a tote that's really filled with school supplies, which we check with teachers at the district to figure out, you know, what the appropriate supplies are. It costs us about $60 a child to do it. It's probably with the tariffs and stuff, it's probably going to go up a bit for next year, unfortunately. And we help, you know, close to 500 kids. That means we have to raise about $30,000 a year to do it.
Gosh, you just wouldn't think. Wow.
And a parent trying to replicate what we do would easily spend twice to three times.
Right.
Because we buy wholesale.
Right.
We buy everything wholesale.
Wow.
I just want to acknowledge that the eyeballs popped out of my head at that number.
Yeah.
That's wild to actually think about how much
83 kids.
Yes, I mean even that. I mean that
and,
is such
and just
an
how much it costs in terms of access. Is,
I would have never.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm, I,
yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah, thank you so much.
Target, if a parent went to Target, say, and tried to do the same thing, they'd walk out of there spending easily over $100 doing the same stuff we're doing. Yeah, probably more.
Gosh, and when we were kids, did we even have backpacks?
We had backpacks, but it was for, like, looks. Like, they were something to draw on and carry, like, the two books that we had.
Oh, right, that's right. You're half my age.
Yeah, we carried, like, piles of notebooks.
Yeah, or a paper bag with my lunch in it.
Tell us how many volunteers are involved in that effort, because you corral the volunteers.
We have around 80 volunteers every year. Some 75, 80 volunteers, because parts of the program run throughout the year. So I'm already buying backpacks for next year because you get sales on school backpacks starting about now, because that's when the vendors all go through, you know, and their chief financial officers start looking at their warehouse and going, we've got way too many school backpacks sitting in the warehouse that aren't going to, you know, move until next, you know, next summer. We need to get rid of them until they have a super sale.
So, Ken, are you listed in the Coastside Gives? What's your category? Are you one of the nonprofits in there?
I'm working on getting Coastside Gives for next year. They did not have allow churches to be on Coastside Gives because there'd been some issues before. So because Holy Family runs the finances and organizes but they've since changed a bit. So like the breakfast that's done at the Lutheran Church on Wednesdays and Thursdays was on Coastside Gives. This year, they kind of cracked the code of what they needed to do to keep things separate and accounted for so that Coastside Gives was comfortable. So I'm going to be starting that process to hopefully get on Coastside Gives for this next year.
Got it. Well, that's great, because that's a great avenue to pull in some more funding.
Ken, tell us about also your... after John Lynch retired as the official Santa for Adopt-A-Family, how did you get roped into the Santa gig?
Well, I talked to John as he was kind of saying, hey, you know, I can't, you know, I'm getting too old to do this, and so on and so forth. And I thought, you know, I already have a beard. You know, so
half the criteria.
Half the criteria. You know, I could do this. And it was a program, you know, the Adopt a Family program is something that's, you know, near and dear to my heart and all those other people.
Which half, Ken?
The bearded half. So I volunteered. So I said, you know, I could do it. Because they were looking for it and looking for it, you know, kind of, they need somebody to do this, need somebody to do this. And I started hearing this enough times that it said, okay, you know, I think someone's telling me I should do this.
Well, we really appreciate what you're doing and love that you have this opportunity to tell the community more about it. Look forward to seeing you on the Coastside Gifts list because why not? There's already 76 nonprofits listed there, and the more we know, the more we have, the more we can give.
Great. Exactly.
Ken, thank you so much for calling in. It's a great opportunity to promote the good work that you're doing with that program, but also you volunteer in so many ways. So I knew you would have some good stories to share with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Okay,
bye-bye.
John, have a great day.
All right. So speaking of Coastside Gives, and a shout out to them and all they work, that's one of the interesting things that kind of Coastside Gives also sheds a light on is how many nonprofits are on the Coastside. Mm-hmm. Every year there's newer ones that get added to the list and as we're, you know, finding out some of them, like the Chamber is a nonprofit, but we don't qualify due to our status, as a 501c6. And so that just sheds a light that there's even more nonprofits on the Coastside. And so for an area with a population of 25,000, you know, including in city, out of city, that's a really staggering number of nonprofits across so many swaths of passions and industries and things like that. Which I think to your point earlier, Beverly, really shows how the Coastside wants to show up and show out for anything and everything that needs help and support. And it's such a wonderful thing.
It's an incredible network because a lot of the nonprofits are connected. They partner on various things. They make things happen together, similar to Holy Family and Coastside Hope, but you know, Table of Plenty and Senior Coastsiders and all of those organizations come together to really build the fabric of the Coastside and the connectivity of the community of the Coastside. I've met so many people with, you know, from one or the other. I mean, Coastside Gives is one of those ones Beverly mentioned. You know, you can give time, you can give money, sometimes you can give goods, but it does remind me to go down the list and say, you know, what are all those things that I care about, and make sure that, you know, whatever I have to give, I spread it around to keep all of those organizations supporting really the wonderful eclectic diversity of our Coastside community. A lot of people need a little bit of help to be here, but they all make an important contribution to our community.
Absolutely. In my retirement, I'm a retired architectural designer. I am doing theater set design and build voluntarily. And it's like playing in the sand pit. And it is indeed like sandcastles at the shore because when you're done, of course, it gets all washed away and dismantled. But to your point, Nancy, how the fabric of the Coastside in these nonprofit organizations is interwoven. Often, as I'm doing the set design and build, I will look at all these nonprofits and see, in fact, how we can dovetail into them, hiring some people from Abundant Grace and contributing clothing and costumes we'll get in, you know, delivering that to Coastside Hope. And they're just... There are so many ways that these organizations can interact with one another.
And so many of the nonprofits also go in together on grants and things like that. There's, you know, there's a lot of programs that are happening on the coastside that are because two or more nonprofits have
collaboratively applying for money.
And you know, spaces like the Hub at Cunha and mm-hmm. things like that. And it's really awesome that more.
What is the Hub at Cunha?
Oh, it's a collaboration between the district, Boys and Girls Club, and CEF and ALAS, that they all went in on a grant and created a space where there's those portables that Boys and Girls Club is housed in. And it's a space for kid programming for kids and their parents. And so they might have some after-school programs, but they might have, like for the seniors at the high school, a program about how to teach the parents how to deal with financial aid and those types of things.
Wow.
Oh, we have another call. Hi,
hello
caller.
There. It's your friend Kevin.
Oh, hi, Kevin.
Hi, Kevin.
I am going to warn you, Kevin. We're going to go to commercial in about a minute. So we're going to, we'll introduce you and then.
Listen in.
Yeah, and then we'll talk to you after. Yeah. But thank you for calling in.
So Kevin, pronounce your last name for me.
Well, it's Nishinsky, but Kevin is absolutely fine.
Nishinsky. Kevin began volunteering at a young age as a student in a Catholic grade school. Volunteering was a part of his curriculum. As an adult, he has volunteered with many local, national, and international organizations, from pets to human rights policy, working on policy and raising money for numerous groups. He has been volunteering since the 80s. Oh, my God, how old does that make you, Kevin?
I am 53.
Yay! Still celebrate. Just a spring chicken. Many of you will have likely seen some of the local campaigns he has done here on the coast as a member of Coastside Allies. And I'm sorry, Kevin. I have to say I met you on the MCC, and we're going to hear your stories after the break.
Awesome.
This is Community Radio for the Coastside.
100.9 KHMB.
Coastal Windage is brought to you by Cameron's Restaurant and Pub in Half Moon Bay. Come for the food, stay for the fun. That's Cameron's Restaurant and Pub on Highway 1 in Half Moon Bay.
This is Jay Michaels. Make sure to join me and Stan Warren Littrell coming up at 10 o'clock right after Coastal Windage. We'll have a look at today in history, plus we'll get to a brand new forgotten find. It all happens at 10 a.m. right here from 100.9 FM KHMB.
And we're back. Thank you so much for calling in, Kevin. And if anybody else wants to call in, 650-712-1233. Kevin, tell us about MCC and your volunteering.
No, don't tell us about MCC.
Sorry.
Tell us about your inspiration for volunteering. I know you have a great story.
Volunteering for me started kind of earlier than I thought. As I grew into an adult and took on many different charges and wore many different hats as it pertains to volunteering, raising funds, raising awareness, etc., I look back at my life and I realized that, you know, one of the very first times that I volunteered was in school. And I was really lucky. I got to work with my grandfather, who had had dementia and some mental health issues, and going to his house one day a week for half of the day, and just sitting and listening and, you know, hearing his stories, prepping his meals, helping him with, you know, things like that. At the time, I didn't think that was volunteering, because it was my family, but those kinds of things definitely led me to my most kind of altruistic self as it pertains to community.
That's so true, Kevin. When you come from a, you know, a core value place of love for your family and giving, and then you turn around and extend that outward to the world, that's a real difference in fundamental strategy. Yeah.
I was trying to think about, you know, this interview today and what I wanted to say. And one of the things that I wanted to say is oftentimes, whether we're raising money, and I will talk about that, or we're giving of our time, sometimes we think we're doing one piece only. But regardless of what you're doing, you are giving of yourself. And sometimes I think people don't always see the receiving part, because the receiving isn't coming in maybe as the same way that they're providing something to the community. So if you're volunteering your time and you're handing out food or clothing, or you're doing, you know, some activity to help a portion of our community, it is actually returned to you. Your hand, you are receiving at the same time, and it might not be that day, or it might be that day, and it's really in the smiles of the faces of the people that you're working with. It's in the gratitude from your neighbors, the acknowledgments within your community. So if you have your eyes and your heart open, you can tether the two of those together and understand that to give and to receive is very cyclical. The symbology of having your hands out extended oftentimes is looked at as having your hands out to receive, but it's also very akin to giving. And so in that, there is a complete cycle within the concept of volunteering.
Did you tell me that was something your grandma used to tell you?
That is right. That's what my grandmother used to tell me. And she always prefaced it by saying, you know, if you want a successful life, you have to understand how, she said God, I say the universe, but how the universe works in this life. And that is, no one is guaranteed a free ride. Like, horrible things happen to good people all the time, and we just have to be our most resilient selves. But if you want a truly blessed and fortunate life, to, you know, use that metaphor, you know, to keep your arms open. And the way that she framed it was, there's no way God can give you all the gifts that he has in store for you if your hands are filled with baggage and stuff from, you know, your past. So
Love that. Yeah. Yeah.
Kevin, this is Nancy. I think I first met you when you were in the process of creating Coastside Allies. Can you, which is a big ambition to start something that's a new group with its focus.
Can you talk about that?
Talk about what motivated you to do that and how you got that started.
Coastside Allies evolved as a result of wanting to see action, and I do indeed sit on the MCC, but I have worked with local politicians, elected officials, and departments over my years in policy and kind of doing things for the community, mostly structural level interventions or changes that are generational in their duration. And I kind of felt like things got very mucky as it pertains to just, you know, trying to organize and do things and mobilize community. And so Coastside Allies really evolved around organic grassroots initiatives. And we are a very kind of co-governance run group. When we work on policies, we try to, you know, lead with kindness. We look at our decision makers and stakeholders as our friends, not our enemies. And we work on various things. We've raised to date, since we started, it's been just under a year, we've raised about $180,000 for various community organizations. And that is a huge win, especially since most of that comes from community members.
Is that how you, this new, and you'll talk about this new organization regarding teachers, was engendered, mm-hmm. or is that separate?
Nope. So it is part of it. So Coastside Allies has two arms. One is the policy part, which we celebrated our very first victory, where the county allocated resources, actual dollars and cents, to complete the fire break between El Granada Boulevard and the Open Space Trust, which is something to date no community group has been able to do. And then we also have what we call our giving campaign. So our newest campaign is about to launch now that the kids are back in school and teachers can kind of survey the landscape and see what they need. We are focused on treasuring our teachers is the campaign.
Treasuring our teachers.
So, and it's all local. It's a way for the community to give resources and dollars and cents so that we can acquire the things that teachers generally historically have paid for out of pocket in this environment.
Right. So you're formalizing that. I do remember when my kids were in, especially elementary school, the teachers would kind of put out a note as the funds diminished. We need this, this, and this, and this. You can buy them or provide us with the money. But it was each teacher had to put out the effort to do that. So how do you do that? How does Treasuring Our Teachers work?
So Treasure Our Teachers, what we're going to do is we're going to work with teachers. They're going to have to show, you know, clearly some identification and, you know, identify the school and, you know, the class that they're teaching. And then we're really just going to, we're going to go on, you know, trust. That's what I do for most of these giving campaigns. There's not really a lot of people who are going to show up with I don't know, the wrong intention. The intention is to get these supplies to teachers who need it. You'll be able to sign up. We'll be able to survey how many teachers sign up and how much money we need to raise. I think we'll kind of do a, kind of a, like a prefix menu, if you will, of supplies that teachers might need, and then they can write in some other things. And from there, we'll go and, you know, try to secure those things and get that to those teachers.
Wow.
It's sort of like the teacher analogy to the backpack program for kids.
That's what was running through my mind. Love it, Kevin. Wow.
Yeah. It's good to work on both, because Coastside Allies has a lot of leaders of industry. We have attorneys, we have doctors, we have teachers, people from all backgrounds, and just moms and dads, and you know people who have kids that are going to school, and you know they're hurting too. So it's not it is Treasure Our Teachers, but if you think about the ripple effect of your movement, of your action, you'll often find that you are having an effect on, you know, the parents of those children, and then those children and how they interact with their friends and, you know, sharing. It really fosters an opportunity to kind of plant that seed. And when somebody receives something like that as a gift or free, it's oftentimes life-changing. I think that's been my experience with being on the receiving end. Raising money is
That relief when you provide something that just requires so much effort on the part of the person working in that position to provide, when you take some of that load off, it's a tremendous gift. And I have noticed that between the children and the animals, that is the biggest rallying cry, the biggest draw for giving on the coast side. I mean, how can you say no, honestly?
Yeah, it's hard to say no. And I mean, it's really in my blood. I found early on that I had a knack for framing things in the right way to encourage people to want to give. I think there's some inert values in all of this. Like, I truly do believe that we all can feel internally right from wrong. And in that same vein, I feel like we all can truly sense when something is worthwhile. Now, I've done probably 12 to 13 campaigns now with Coastside Allies, giving campaigns. And it's really taken very little effort to get people to give money and resources.
Can you tell us what some of those were?
Sure. So I volunteer for a youth housing alliance in San Francisco, and this is working with LGBTQIA adolescents, so ages 12 to 26 years of age. And there's children who are living with HIV and AIDS that have been either homeless, maybe they're on the spectrum. So there's a lot of like varying components. But within that, there's, I'm using this as one example. One of those things will resonate with a group of people or with a donor. And I try to humanize my campaigns in as much as
so you'll approach like a core donor on an issue that you feel they have compassion around.
That's right. I always try to work with corporate matching campaigns, and it's generally there are some discretionary dollars now in this environment that we live in that's becoming more and more difficult.
Right.
And so you have to kind of think outside of the box, and you really have to humanize the campaign in a way where community members are going to want to walk to your home and give you money, which
yeah.
I've had.
So this
I've
is
had a lot
this
of
is the
in that as well.
Right, and that's a real talent. This is the money end of giving, and it's a talent to be able to raise funds, so desperately needed funds for these organizations. Not everybody has this talent.
I used to write grants for for my life.
Another talent.
For one of my jobs, and it was really not lost on me that the art of asking for funds isn't just, you know, here's the issue, can you please give us some money?
Right.
But talking about the ripple effect that I mentioned earlier,
yes.
And really humanizing the target group and illuminating the impact that for most of these companies, let's face it, it's a drop in the bucket. And then there's community members where it may not be a drop in a bucket, and
right.
It's a really hard thing to do. So you have to be very mindful of.
You have to give them a reason.
Right. Both sides. You have to be very mindful of both sides of that.
Yeah. What are some of the other giving campaigns you've done?
The most recent one that we did, which was amazingly successful, was Easter Baskets for Babes here locally for Coastside Hope. And, I've worked with Coastside Hope for probably 20 different years. My husband and I have either given money through our works, through our company, or, donated money. And my husband, Steve, working for Kaiser Permanente, started with some of the very earliest grants for them in the 90s. And, it was an event where we just wanted to make sure that kids who are really most adversely affected by a lack of resources in their life, whether it be at school through backpacks or whether it be at home for food and jackets and clothing, et cetera, oftentimes these families just get by with the bare minimum. So for our campaigns, we try to do things that are special and magical and recreate the moments that most of us are very fortunate to have experienced in our lifetime, waking up on Easter and having a huge basket downstairs, and the elation and the just the absolute giddiness of it. And
yeah, you really tie into that human connection.
Yeah. And talking about the human connection, when you're able to get those resources and those funds, 9 out of 10 times I will see people that I know from my everyday life at the events that we have sponsored. And some of them will have their head down, and I will go to them and I just put my arm on them. And I'm like, it's very good to see you. And sometimes they get emotional and they talk about how difficult it is to talk about
sure.
being a family in need or to have, the need to do this. And
right, and the tremendous courage to show up to receive something someone's going to give you because you are in need, and not have any kind of shame around it.
That's the other thing. There's quite a bit of shame that kind of lives in between all of that space that we're talking about. And so I think it's been very helpful for me to, always be present at my events, no matter what it is, and to make sure that I am doing what I can to kind of eliminate some of that and let people know that it's okay to be where you are. And Coastside Allies and myself, my motto in life is meet people where they are.
Yes.
And, that's been very helpful in fostering deeper, more intimate relationships with my community.
And there's a real pay it forward aspect too, isn't there? So when you're in a place of need, and we all have been to some extent on some level, and you receive what someone is generously wanting to give you, instead of feeling more of the shame, although you there are aspects of that, you in turn turn around and are able at some point, somewhere, somehow to give to someone else. And
that's right.
That practice of receiving and giving it that you talked about.
The cycle of receiving and giving
has
so many hidden gems in it. And I think anybody who's been to a community-run event and given of their time and energy and resources, when you see that target group's face and you see their reaction, and especially when kids are involved, when we do our Christmas events and when we do, special events, kids just, hugging you and, elated, that is food for the soul.
Isn't it?
Actually, it's more than that. Thinking about this, I just happened to click on the Coastside Buzz newsletter, which cited a study from Sandy Winter's newsletter from Senior Coastsiders. And it was a new study in social science and medicine that reports that regular time spent volunteering or helping outside the home significantly slows cognitive decline in middle-aged and older adults, which is many, many of us here on the coast. And that
I represent that remark.
Yes. I mean, it looked at both formal volunteering and just informal helping somebody, and both had this positive effect on your cognitive retention of your cognitive abilities. And the more time was spent...
What are you stammering there?
Yeah, let me try to get a word out.
Wait a minute, you're having a breakdown over there.
Yeah, just a little bit. But the more time spent, the more benefit there was. Even though it's difficult to spend the time sometimes. So it has a payback in ways that you might not realize at the time, but... Kevin, when you're my age, you'll, really be benefiting from all that you're doing now.
It's a very true statement. And I think that I benefit already, but I do think that it takes a lot of courage to volunteer. It takes a lot of courage to put yourself out there. As I'm, calling in to talk about money, I would encourage people to really just think about a few kind of core key objectives. Really identify the need and try to look at all of the different layers. We talk about the ripple, where the stone lands, and then all of the waves out. And find ways to talk about all of those ripples, all of those various points of contact that this one act will foster. And then really, work on communicating in a way that reaches your target audience. So whether you're posting and asking for help from your community, or you're writing a letter to a corporate entity, it's really important to know your audience and to humanize the target for this group and really emphasize the reasons why it's so important to give to a particular community. And I used to give workshops on this, on how, you know, how to write grants and how to receive funds. But I truly believe if you start with a good cause, one that touches the hearts of you, but then also, you know, your community, you will find that with very little effort, really, the humanization of these marginalized communities and these people who are desperately in need of some assistance will trickle a ripple effect in itself.
And that's a good point, Kevin. It's sort of a sidebar to what you just said, but how to choose which organizations, which causes you want to spend your time and money giving to. And what you said was what touches your heart.
Right. If you're not married to it, if you don't have some visceral reaction to what would happen without these resources, if you don't have some, you know, passionate connection to the target within the campaign, it's a very heavy lift. It's a kind of a reflex instead of a passion project.
Right, it's a reaction instead of an inspiration. Mm-hmm. Nancy?
Well, you know, one of the things that Kevin and Beverly and I have in common, in addition to volunteering and work with the nonprofits and fundraising for the nonprofits, is with other community support organizations, Kevin on Midcoast Community Council, Beverly on Coastside Design Review Committee, me on Granada Community Services District. These boards and councils and, you know, advisory commissions all do, they're basically volunteer work. Even if you have to campaign and compete and be elected to them, they're still volunteer work. They don't pay minimum wage, as Crislin and I noted. And they do take a lot of time, and it's maybe a little bit different motivation for those where you're trying to do something tangible that impacts and supports your community in a different way. And I know the first time I ran, I was uncontested. I know Kevin ended up being interviewed for Midcoast Community Council because they had three open seats and didn't get candidates in the election for them. So I think I also want to encourage people to look for those kinds of opportunity. Sometimes you have to compete for them. Sometimes you don't.
Right.
But they also play a really significant role for the community. And when they're not filled, or when it's basically, you know, the same 10 people for, you know, 10 years that are doing them, you're not refreshing them and bringing new views into them. And they tend to be, peopled by retired people. And I know it's hard to do these things when you are not a retired person.
It takes a lot of time.
But they're also another opportunity to do something really tangible for your community.
Yeah, especially. Sorry, Kevin, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, to piggyback onto that, I think all of us would agree in all three different cases that in our roles, we advocate for resources. Resources and allocation of resources is a huge part of our volunteering, whether we're on a council or a board, you know, part of, you know, local city politics, whether you have governance or not. I'm in an advocacy group, you know, GCSD, you know, it manages large amounts of money and takes care of different things and is kind of growing that aptitude currently.
GCSD,
and
there's
Beverly as well. So
there's site councils and schools and the other organizations in schools and
so
the school board and
is very much part of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're hard
all
jobs
the way through,
but they need good people.
Yeah. Thank you for all that you do, Kevin. Really, Kevin said in a New Zealand accent.
Kevin.
Kevin, we really, really appreciate you. You're the energy. How long have you been on the coastside since?
We've been here for just going on 20 years.
20 years. So.
Yep, and another year it'll be 20 years.
2005. about that.
Yeah, that's when we bought our house. We lived in an apartment for a while while it was fixed up. But we've been here actually since, I've been here since the 90s.
Yeah.
In the Bay Area, my husband.
Bay Area,
the early 80s.
Yeah. Well, you've made a huge difference here on the coast side. I'm so excited to have met you and getting to know you. You are appreciated.
It's very mutual. You guys have a good rest of your day and happy weekend.
Yeah.
Happy weekend.
Thank you, Kevin.
Oh, gosh. So many good people on this coast side, and never could fill in just an hour with how many accolades, even just the four of us, or the three of us plus the two callers have, let alone all the people on the coast side. Oh, we have one more caller trying to get in that last minute, so make it quick.
Okay. Are we live?
Yes.
Okay. My name is Lori Weigelt. I've been listening to your show. It's wonderful today. I wanted to let the community know about a nonprofit called the Coastside Community Breakfast.
Yes.
We're a nonprofit that operates out of the Coastside Lutheran Church in Half Moon Bay. And we serve hot, nutritious breakfast to anybody who needs it on Wednesday and Thursday mornings. We serve probably at least 100 people each day. And so we always need good volunteers. So volunteers could mean cooking, serving, cleaning, dishes, you know, everything, talking to guests.
What time do they start?
We serve between 7 and 9 a.m. on Wednesdays and Thursdays.
At the Lutheran Church?
At the Lutheran Church. So if people want to learn more, they can go to the website.
What website?
So they can go to coastslidelutheran.net. Or if they're interested in volunteer, they can go send an email to info@coastslidelutheran.org. It's a great community service. We serve people that are in need. We have some people that are seniors that just want the community interaction. But we have lovely breakfast for people in need twice a week.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for doing that, Lori.
What a great show today. Really appreciate it.
What a great note to end on. Come volunteer your time and or money to these many organizations. Find your passion.
All right. Thank you, Coastside. We hope you have a wonderful weekend and you get out there and volunteer your time.
Are we supposed to say Coastal Windage Talk of the Town?
KHMB, Coastal Windage Talk of the Town.